Welcome to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner.
Hey girl, I see you.
I see you too. We're in the same room.
You are right here. I can touch you.
We're touching each other.
You feel good.
You do too.
Well, what are we going to talk about now that we're together?
I'm going to be talking about something pretty depressing, but interesting.
Okay. As long as it's interesting.
Yeah. Not depressing and boring.
Is it a surprise? You're not going to tell me what
it is? No, I'm going to tell you. Okay. It is the Tulsa Race Riots, or I like to call the Greensboro Massacre.
Damn, I don't really know much about that, so I'm glad you are bringing it to the attention,
Spreading
that knowledge.
Gonna educate the masses.
She don't even need a pamphlet for it. She's just throwing some truth bombs down with the knowledge.
Just my mouth.
Well, yes, just your mouth.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'm going to talk about your mouth.
Oh.
That's it. It's cute.
Thank you.
I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can I see your mouth, and if I wanted to, I could touch it, but I'm not. Because
no,
you don't want
I don't
my
need
finger.
To do that.
I just had a burrito.
Yeah, I don't need that meaty finger.
But you remember when we were talking about the Levi's, they were doing the AIDS quilt thing?
Yeah!
And I was like, fuck that Levi's, you don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
So I want an honor continuing with Pride Month.
Yes, we're in June.
We're still here in June. It is a June Jacking away. Is that what the kids say?
I don't know. Sounds
June jacking?
I'm a June jack this month.
Sounds gross.
It does.
Okay. Just let's call a spade a spade.
Okay.
just call it what it is. I'm talking about the history of the AIDS quilts.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I feel like folks don't know.
We need to remind people.
It's a reminder, because Levi's is just trying to make some money off of it, but we are here about the facts.
Yes.
Not the fiction.
Ooh, just the facts.
Just the facts, ma'am, on Minority Corner, happening
right now. Now?
No. Yeah, are we doing it now?
Is it now?
Is it now?
I think it's now.
Okay, is it?
Okay.
Oh, wait, it's happening
right now!
Hey, girl.
Hey, James.
Wait, before we start, let me just get a little sip from my...
Ooh, what's that?
It's a LaCroix.
Ooh.
I have to... So, I flew into San Francisco, and Eke and I just had a little meeting, shall we say.
It was a business weekend.
It was a business meeting. There was a meeting in the ladies' room.
Which is the Bay Area.
We got a lot of things that we're like, you know, I need to fly in.
Yes.
We're not going to say what it is, but there's something on the books cooking for us.
I mean, if you're on Facebook, you probably know what
it is.
If
you're on Facebook, yeah.
So,
but why come out to the Bay Area, and what is everybody drinking? LaCroix.
LaCroix, boy.
We ain't got this in New York.
You got it in New York.
No one I know drinks it. This
Watch.
Is bougie.
You're going to go back and you're going to see nothing but LaCroix every time you go back. Everybody's drinking it. Hipsters are drinking it. Business people are drinking it. Tech people are drinking it.
I think especially my friends were saying that the tech industry is really driving this LaCroix rush. This LaCroix boom, if we will.
It is a boom.
It's a boom, boom, boom.
Well, you know why people like it.
Why? Because it's fancy?
Well, one, it's not fancy.
Well, can you explain to for those of you who don't have LaCroix in your neighborhood, can you walk us through what it is?
Flavored fizzy water.
Well, that's a lot easier than I thought it was. So you're going to have to go, well, first it's fermented.
No.
Okay.
Nope.
All right.
Just carbonated water with some fruit essence in it. People like it because there's no sugar. Oh. There's no added flavor. It's just off like fruit essence and water.
You know, I'm not the biggest fan of fizzy water at first. I gotta say, it took me a while to warm up to it, and now I'm like fucking addicted. Except for
right?
I love my water. I love my tap. I love my tap water, which is probably filled with lead, and I'm probably gonna die of slow, painful,
that's
agonizing,
a bad
crazy,
end of the story.
Crazy death.
Just
but not with
depressed.
LaCroix.
No, not with LaCroix.
You were from this.
Lead free.
That's their advertisement. Hey, LaCroix, if you need us to do some advertising for you. LaCroix, now with less lead, no lead.
Lead free. Wow, is this fizzy water lead free?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
End of commercial. Done. Give us millions of dollars. So it's delicious. Everyone's drinking it here.
It's really good. They have a soundtrack that I played for James.
Oh yeah, LaCroix Boy. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's by Little Dipper, Big Dipper.
Big Dipper.
Big Dipper. Who's Little Dipper? Can I be Little Dipper?
I don't know. Check it out.
Okay.
I'm sure. Why not? Why can't you be Little Dipper?
Yeah, why can't? Who is stopping me?
There can be multiple Little Dippers.
Don't you stop me. Let me be Little Dipper. Who are we fighting against? Doesn't matter.
Nobody.
We are rip-roaring ready to go.
We are, because we are in the same room. And
I bet that the listeners are like, whoa.
I know, they're like, you need to calm the fuck down.
We're excited. Don't stop us, listeners.
Don't tamper our fun.
We found someone to fight. We love you. Thank you for listening. We're looking for a fight. We are ready.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Just play it cool, Aneke.
Beep-bop-boop.
Real cool.
Boo-do-do-boop.
Okay, something I've been dying to tell you about is my flight here.
Okay, what is it? You literally got off the plane and you're like, my flight was crazy.
And I'm not going to tell you.
I'm not going to tell you until we record. So and then get this, audience, 10 minutes before we record, James goes, I might just tell you offline.
She was like, no, for the show. And so it's so funny because I watched, what's the one with Amy Adams? She's talking to aliens.
Arrival.
So I watched Arrival, blew my mind. Yes. I'm going to write a book about it, but we'll get to that another day. And so I blew my mind. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Life is so good.
Yeah.
And then I click over to the corner of I'm sitting in the middle aisle, middle seat.
Worst.
Like the middle of the middle.
That's the worst seat.
Anything to get to you. I flew all night.
I flew all night.
To get to you. And so I'm sitting in the middle, and there's this guy who's sitting, not the guy next to me on the right.
Okay.
It's the guy who's on the other side of the aisle.
Got it.
And he takes out this box that it looks like friendship bracelets to me, but then he starts twiddling around with them. They're wires.
No!
And he starts connecting wires together, and then he connects it into this other little doodad that starts lighting up.
No,
starts lighting up, and then he connects.
You can't be playing around with shit like that on a plane.
The wrong hobby to have. And then, it gets even worse. This little doodad, he connects it into a computer.
What is he doing?
And then he's like, and it looks like code. It looks like computer
code.
Like
he's in the Matrix.
Like he's like, yeah, and I'm just like, and so then I'm just like, all right, maybe I'm just, my fears, I don't want, you know, Buddhist traditions teaches you let fear sit with you.
I can't believe
you don't have to let it to take, and I'm like thinking like someone else will say something if it's crazy, right? Someone else will be like,
James, it's the number one motto of an airport is if you see something, say something. You did not say something.
Oh, wait, I'm not done.
Oh, okay.
Because part of me is just trying to be like, all right, just play it. Like, maybe I'm just overreacting. And I'm like, someone else will say something. But then I'm thinking, what if they're thinking the same thing? Someone else will say something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be the crazy person going off.
Right.
And so then I Charlie's Angels this shit. I'm going to do some investigating. Okay. So I lean over the person, sitting next to me.
Yeah.
I lean over to him. I'm just like, hey, you. Hey, what are you working on over there?
This sounds weird.
What is that? I've never seen that before.
I'm hitting pause right now.
Yes.
Because I like how you were like, I'm Charlie's Angeling it.
I'm undercover.
I thought you were going to put on like a steward. A steward outfit, walk by, be like, do you want some water? And then spill it on the thing. Not just like, hey, what are you doing?
Well, I just asked him
what he was doing.
In my mind, I was like, I'm going to become Charlie's Angels. I'm undercover investigating. He don't know me.
You literally were like, hey, what's that?
And I just did it very casually. Hey, I've never seen anything like that. And then part of me was like, oh, and so this is where profiling in your brain and fears get really crazy. And I'm going to just flat out walk you through my brain process.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
And so at first I'm like, he looks just like a, you know, average sort of like white guy or something. Nope. Definitely had like a Middle Eastern accent.
Oh no.
I know. And that's why I'm just putting it all out there.
Right.
Because I'm also thinking I'm going to die. This man is building a bomb.
We need to embrace the fact that we feel these certain things.
Yeah.
Everybody has a bias.
Absolutely.
So tell me what he said.
And so then I'm just like, why do you have to have a fucking accent, right?
Yeah, you're like, fuck.
And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just, you know, playing with these, this accent feels weird. I'm just gonna go with it because I want you to be where I am.
Right.
It's actually going to be Russian
it
more
sounds
than anything.
Kind of, okay, yeah.
I'm going to make it Russian
okay,
for you.
Okay,
all right.
Because I was like,
doing her thing.
Okay.
Y'all know I got love,
yeah.
But I need you to be where
I'm
I
there.
Was.
I'm sitting next to you on the plane.
Okay, you're the British guy reading that David Sedaris
book. I'm like,
book,
can I read
also
this
won't
book?
Say something.
Because he's reading his book.
So he's like, I've never done this before. I teach kids how to do this. I'm like, are these like LED lights? He's like, yes, it's LED lights. That's what I'm doing. And I'm just like, okay. And then he yells to the guy up in like a few seats in front of him in their language.
Oh, no.
And so now they're communicating. And it's just like, could this situation get any worse? Like,
this
it's just getting
so
bad.
This is awkward on
so
many levels.
So then I'm just like, okay. And I'm like, I need to go talk to, I'm like one of the stewardess. Why is no one saying anything?
Mm-hmm.
So then I walk to the back and I'm just like, okay, excuse me.
Yeah.
And so then I go back and he was talking about how he teaches kids how to do this stuff too. And I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, if he's never done it before.
So I got, he was like, it's a new hobby of mine, or it's a new thing that I'm doing. Okay. I'm just learning how to do this.
Okay.
And so I go to the back, and there's the male steward, the male stewardess.
The stew.
The male stew.
I don't know.
So male stew's
attendant.
In the back.
Attendant. Late attendant.
So the attendant dude's in the back. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, so that guy with the wires and the light, that's a little weird, right? And he's like, yeah, that is weird. That, like, I went back there for reassurance, for him to be like, listen, we're trained on it, or we've already got eyes on him. Like,
this is the thing. But he's just like, yeah,
weird. He's like, and he's like, yeah, I mean, do you think that is weird? He's like, should I say something?
Why is he asking you?
I need you reassurance from you, attendant dude. And I'm just like, yeah, it's making me feel a little uncomfortable. And he's like, okay, he never does. All the attendants walk back and forth. But then when I get back to the seat, the guy that he was communicating to earlier has this little child who's like, ooh, blinky lights.
Baby. Okay, good.
So, but I still was, for the rest of my 2.5 hours of the flight,
just,
I was
like side-eyeing
uncomfortable
him.
The entire time. So that's what happened. Wrong hobby to have on a plane, right?
When you are on a plane, you should not have things that go loud and boom. You should not have wires that connect to each other, and you should not have blinky light things, because those things are scary to any person.
I thought it was incredibly insensitive. I also said, like, damn, this guy is not worried about like, me, even me as a black man, I'm trying to be,
real talk, a lot of people, I'll go shopping with them, and they will straight up just, like, put things in their purse and be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy this. It's fine. I'm walking around a store holding something, I'm worried that people think that I'm stealing, which is terrible. I shouldn't feel that way, but that's what it is.
Absolutely. Every time I walk into a store, I literally walk around with my hands up.
I know. I'm like, I'm not touching it.
Yeah. And so it's so weird that it's like this guy that wherever he was from, I find it like, well, look at you living your best life.
Because he's like,
I am not afraid of anything.
I'm working on this kid thing. It's a kid thing.
Leave me alone.
But it's wires.
Still, my thing though is, and if you're listening, I want you to know that it was really uncomfortable for you to do that on the plane. It's rude because like, things are crazy enough. Like, it's rude.
It's his fault.
So don't build your little, like, build a friendship bracelet, not a blinky light on the plane. And that's all I got to say.
I know. It just seems kind of, that's a lot.
So
that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's
so that was my plane right here.
That's a lot of flight.
It was a lot of flight. I watched Lion after, like, while that was happening. And so, but I was... That movie was intense to me because I was side-eyeing this guy the entire
time. Meanwhile, there's a lost kid in India.
Yeah, that was my experience.
That's stressful.
There was a lot of stressful things happening.
The second half of Lion is not that great.
Oh, you mean when it's not the little kid?
When it's just Dev Patel being sad.
And sexy as all.
He's sexy, but that only lasts a minute. Then he's sad, making weird murder charts on his wall about where he's from. And then he's like looking at desserts, crying about being lost, and his weird girlfriend making fun of his brother.
One of the Maras.
Seriously needs some help.
Mara.
Rooney Mara.
Okay. Was she Dragon Tattoo?
She's Dragon Tattoo.
Damn. Did she have an accent in Dragon Tattoo? She really transformed in that movie.
She did. And she did have an accent, and she now is dating Joaquin Phoenix. So she's probably a little weird.
Can I ask you a question? Would you just never date a sad, sexy guy? Like, that's not sexy to you?
Who, like Joaquin Phoenix?
No, like, fuck Joaquin Phoenix. He's crazy.
I would definitely date a sad, sexy guy. But it depends on for how long.
Because I'm also like, I will put this out there. My inner codependent is like, I can fix him and help him.
Ooh, no.
Like, I'm the one he's gonna help him
through
this.
That's too much of a burden.
I love a burden. Oh. Lay it all on me, baby. And then you know what's gonna happen? I'm gonna be like, I ain't got time for this.
I'm tired of this.
After 3 weeks, I am done. So just note to the masses, like... Don't lay it all on me for too long. You got 3 weeks, fix your shit, and let's go.
You need friendship. It's just about, you need a friend who you have sex with. That's what a good working relationship is. Everybody needs to listen to me when they say like, ooh, whatever. When you have a friend that you also want to have sex with, key to life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in that case, book.
Key to life.
Key to life. Have sex with your friends.
Three pages. First page, friend. Second page, sex. Last page, done.
Oh, there you go. Suddenly life just got so much easier and simpler. Everything just makes all the sense.
It's a pamphlet, actually.
Oh, well, okay.
It's three pages.
Because you just open it up. Are there like pictures in this?
You just fold it out. No, okay. Just the letters.
You know what? What I love about that is that you save ink.
Thank you.
And which is going to help you make money.
Because
you lose money on a pamphlet.
It's true. My pamphlets will cost $20 each.
Okay. Well, there you go. Do you want this pamphlet? Yes,
$20.
And then they get it, and they open it up piece by piece, and they're like, oh, everything makes sense. $20 well spent.
I hope so. That's the plan.
Good job.
Thank you.
Girl, you don't even need me to be your Dina Lohan at all today.
Well, we actually can high five.
I know. It feels good. Crazy. Usually it's awkward.
And it's quiet.
Do we have time to ask you about your thoughts on Kathy Griffin?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Or should we go to the corner?
Well, do you want to give some thoughts on Kathy Griffin?
Well, I just wanted to touch on the Kathy Griffin thing because you and I went to go see, we love a Kathy Griffin.
True.
We saw her live.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, Kathy Griffin did this photography thing, this joke thing where she was...
Where have you been if you don't know this?
If you don't know, but just catching you up from... You left your cave and now you're out in the real world and this is what happened. Mm-hmm. And she was just holding like a severed head of the president.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's all enraged.
Yeah.
And then she apologized, though.
Right.
Yeah. I guess my thing is that I just was, I think the difference in that's about this than other things, and you and I were talking about this, that the Obamas got made fun of and teased, like, harshly.
All the time.
Racist shit, just terrible, terrible things.
Michelle Obama. Death threats. Compared to monkeys, compared to terrorists, compared to... I mean, Trump literally led a whole movement saying that Obama wasn't born in America.
And I never...
Not heard, American.
Yeah, and I never heard anybody on that side condemn any of
Nobody
that.
Nobody said who went too far.
And I will say, sorry to jump in here, but the progressives on all front were like, Kathy, you went too far.
Mm.
Like, I feel like they, like, for the most part, like, her base, like, a lot of the, like, the LGBT, the gays, the liberal, like, the folks who are into her.
Well, we always try to take the high ground, which I think is admirable, but at this point, we've reached such a low moment in politics that it's, one, I think it was tacky and stupid, but at the same time, he deserves tacky and stupid.
Yeah.
He deserves it, because he's making our country tacky and stupid. The fact that he can fix his face to talk about, use the London, all these terror attacks on London as a way to talk about gun control and guns over here and like in the Muslim ban over here is disgusting.
Yeah.
He is disgusting.
Well, what I'm really hearing from you and I kind of appreciate is you're kind of just like, and so?
And that
face is like, so what? Because you're also
it's
right.
It's a distraction.
Like, you're absolutely right. This is a fucking distraction. And so what? A female comedian hurt your fucking feelings. Move on.
Get over
and
it.
And it's only Kathy Griffin. Like, she's on the D-list. Like, it's not like she has this huge political sway and power that, like, some gay guy is going to go out there and try to be
They already are not voting for him.
It's already, like, not happening. And move on. You're right. I feel like it's such a distraction. And also, like, she was trying to do a commentary on the comments that he said about Megyn Kelly, that she had, like, blood coming out of her everywhere.
Right. And she had a bloody head of his. I mean, it wasn't
a good joke.
No.
It didn't land.
And Kathy Griffin kind of irritates me. I think that she's a little bit of a stunt queen herself.
She's the liberal Ann Coulter.
Yeah, which is great. We need it on both sides.
Yeah.
But I feel like... we need to be focusing on the fact that we're not, when are we going to impeach him?
Mm.
He's tweeting nonsense. We're laughing and joking about it. He's being rude. He's all of this stuff. We're in this cycle of rinse, wash, repeat or wash, rinse, repeat over and over again. And nothing is being done to get him out. When can we get him out? Like, I'm sick of his shenanigans and people getting upset and then forgetting about it.
Yeah, and it's almost like, I mean, I'm at the gym and I see CNN in the background. I don't like to watch it, but it's almost like a weekly episode. It's like, what's happening this week? And you know what? I was watching, I'm watching House of Cards, and I'm having a difficult time. First of all, House of Cards used to be fun to watch when Obama was president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're seeing, like, shady, shitty things happening in government, House of Cards is no longer fun to watch.
No.
And I'm also having a difficulty, like... of knowing what happened in House of... what's real and what's House of Cards.
Right.
Because it's just become this huge, ridiculous drama.
It's a clusterfuck.
And I don't know that there is an answer. I think, like, it'd be so hard to, honestly, to impeach him and go through that process, and it's just a long process that I just don't know. So I guess we gotta just keep resisting.
Right.
Keep doing our thing.
Exactly. Stay focused.
Thank you.
Eyes on the prize.
Yeah, see, me, you just set me straight. I'm like, what do you think about Kathy Griffin? You're like, doesn't matter, stay focused. Thank you, Aneka. You're right.
Sorry.
All right, let's do this. Shall we go?
Let's go.
All right.
This is my corner.
It's your corner.
Yeah, Jennifer Hudson.
Hey. Have a good corner, Aneka.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about, I was wrong at the beginning, the Tulsa race riots, or what I like to call the Greenwood Massacre.
There it is. What I like is that you corrected yourself before you wrecked yourself.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's true. I don't want people getting the wrong idea.
Because they'll come at you.
They're coming. And they'll be
like, hey, you said that wrong. You're like, thank
you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Y'all are sweet. Well, so what is this about? I don't really know anything about this.
So we're going to go on a journey. Mm. Because a lot of the articles that I read, I was inspired by, actually, Andrew, my husband, sent this to me. And also, I did some more research, and I found some stuff on Ebony online, and also there's a good Wikipedia page about it. I'm not basing it only on Wikipedia, just for a good note to everybody. I have several sources.
Listen, librarian, you've got the receipts. I know you know how to do your research, so I know.
Okay, so we're going to go through some history first. Okay. So when Tulsa became a booming town in the United States, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm.
Thank you, because I was like, I don't know where this is.
It's in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Okay, so it was, people kind of considered it two separate cities because it was segregated. So the white residents of Tulsa, they referred to the area north of the Frisco Railroad tracks as Little Africa.
Oh, Lord. Oh, already.
I know.
Okay, here we, all right. I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay. This community later acquired the name Greenwood by the black residents, okay? So in 1921, it was about home to about 10,000 black residents, and Greenwood was the center on a street known as Greenwood Avenue. So, you know, original name.
Where it came from, yeah.
This street was important because it ran north over a mile from the Frisco Railroad yards, and it was one of the few streets that did not cross through both black and white neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So Greenwood was purely only the black neighborhood of Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
So around the start of the 20th century, so how did all these black people get to this section
of they get Tulsa? There?
So basically, let's go to a couple of people who started it.
Okay.
This one man, O.W. Gurley. He was a wealthy black landowner from Arkansas, and he traveled the United States to participate in the Oklahoma Land Run of 1889.
Okay.
So Oklahoma Land Run was racist, where they basically kicked all the Native Americans off of land, and then they were like, hey, anybody who wants this land, go get it, grab it, take it, and then you become owner of it. I think I mentioned this back a couple episodes ago when Martin Luther King gave the thing where a bunch of white settlers were able to get free land.
Yeah. Oh, meanwhile, that's right.
This is right after slavery, so black people didn't have nothing.
Yeah.
So this man, O.W. Gurley, in 1889 was like, fuck that shit.
Yeah.
He was already well-to-do. He was an entrepreneur.
Wow.
And he had just resigned from a presidential appointment under Grover Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah. And so he was like, I'm going to strike out on my own.
Yeah.
So in 1906, Gurley moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he purchased 40 acres of land.
He got his 40 acres.
He got his 40 acres. And guess this.
What?
He was like, this shit's only going to be sold to color people.
He gets all the snaps. All the snaps.
Right? Because black ownership was unheard of at the time. So he's like, I'm getting my own, but I'm also going to give it to my people as well.
I almost just want to cry of like, just like, to have that, like, you are so boss ass in that time period to be able to have that momentum, that energy, and the tenacity.
Right.
And to say, me too, I'm going to have this and for my people.
Exactly.
Fucking amazing.
Amazing. So here's another story. Another black American entrepreneur, J.B. Stratford. He arrived in Tulsa in 1899. He believed that black people had a better chance of economic progress if they pooled their resources and worked together, which is true.
It's true. Till this day.
I know. Still true. So true. Shop at black-owned businesses. He bought large tracts of real estate in the northeastern part of Tulsa, which he subdivided and also sold exclusively to black folks. So these people are like setting it up. So word started spreading around.
Yeah.
And black Americans who traveled to Oklahoma, they were like, okay, why? Let's go to Oklahoma. This is promised land.
Yeah.
They were able to trace ancestors back to Oklahoma. Like a lot of them were, they had traveled by foot.
Yeah.
By cart.
Wow.
By horses.
However they could.
They traveled by five civilized tribes, traveled on foot with the five civilized tribes, so Native Americans helped them get there.
Wow.
They also traveled along the Trail of Tears, which is depressing, but they traveled there to get there.
Yeah.
They were also, many of the black people were descendants of Creeks, Seminoles, and the Yuchi tribe, so they were definitely, a lot of black people were returning home.
Right, yeah.
So then oil struck.
Ah, fuck.
Black, no.
Okay, this is a good thing.
This is good.
Okay.
Black gold. Oh. So the oil boom in the 1910s, yeah. the teens, northeastern version area of Oklahoma around Tulsa flourished.
Wow.
Including Greenwood neighborhood. And it became so wealthy, it was known as the Negro Wall Street or Black Wall Street.
Oh my God, I want to go to there.
Yeah. So the area was home to several prominent black businessmen. Not only did black Americans want to contribute to the success.
It's a hard word.
Ugh, too many S's and C's.
Why do we need all those S's and C's in there? Calm that down.
They did good.
Yeah.
They
did a good job.
Of their own shops, there was also the racial segregation laws. So they had no other option but to shop in Greenwood with their own people. But they were supporting each other. Right. There was oil boom, wealthy, wealthy area.
Yeah.
So Detroit Avenue along the edge of Sandpipe Hill contained a number of expensive houses that belonged to doctors,
ooh,
lawyers,
yes,
and business owners.
Ooh.
The buildings on Greenwood Ave housed offices of almost all of Tulsa's black lawyers, realtors, doctors, and other professionals.
This is amazing. This sounds like a black utopia.
Right? There were 15 well-known black American physicians, one of whom was Dr. A.C. Jackson.
Okay.
Now,
nasty.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Jackson was considered the most able Negro surgeon in America.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
Damn right.
Okay, so at the same time,
okay,
Ku Klux Klan started
popping up. Oh, fuck, here it goes.
Yeah.
Here we are.
So in northeastern Oklahoma, the Ku Klux Klan started to pop up and there was racial and political tension.
Mm-hmm.
So in about 1921,
yeah,
there were about 3,200 members of the Klan in Tulsa.
Damn. Yeah.
Okay. Ugh. You ready?
I'm not, but okay, just give it to me because I need to know. We need to know this.
So that I've set the scene.
You've set the scene. I know exactly. I feel like I'm magically transported back to there.
Yes.
And I am just waiting to see what happens next.
Okay. So the madness all started in March 31st, 1921, when a 17-year-old white girl named Sarah Page accused a 19-year-old black man, Dick Rollins, of assaulting her. Allegedly.
Right, allegedly. Alleged. Her word. This is...
And she was an elevator operator and he was a shoe shiner.
Okay. They worked at the same building
probably,
or something?
I don't know. All right. So that one event, that's it. The word of one 17-year-old white woman against the word of one 19-year-old black shoe shiner.
Yeah.
Okay, so that gave local mobs of white men acting as police cause to invade the community on March 31st, 1921. This assault was met by a bunch of armed community members to defend their home. Some were black World War I veterans. Mm. So they defended the country, and now they have to defend their home from other Americans.
Damn.
This is why I don't call it a riot, because nobody was, this was brutal. This was brutal.
Yeah.
So during the night and day of the riot, deputized whites killed more than 300 black people.
This is insane.
300.
And this is also like, these are American citizens.
Right.
These are like, that's the end of the sentence. Like, it's like, imagine like folks just coming into your town and city and just slaughtering your community and your people.
300. It gets worse. They looted and burned to the ground 40 square blocks of 1,265 African-American homes, including hospitals, schools, and churches, and destroyed 150 businesses. The city of Tulsa conspired with the mob, arresting more than 6,000 black residents and refusing to provide assistance. Law enforcement dropped firebombs on buildings, homes, and fleeing families, stating that they were protecting against the Negro uprising, and estimated that 10,000 people were left homeless. Remember when I said in 1921 that there were 10,000 black people in Greenwood?
Yep.
Literally everyone who lived there was left homeless.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back into the personal stories.
Yeah.
So O.G. Gurley?
Yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah.
He lost everything. During the race riots, the Gurley Hotel, the street's first commercial enterprise, valued at $55,000, was lost, along with the Brunswick Billard Parlor, the Doc Eastman Hughes Cafe. Gurley also owned a two-story building It housed Carter's barbershop, Hardy Rooms, a pool hall, and a cigar store. All were reduced to ruins by his account and court records. He lost nearly $200,000 in the 1921 massacre. I'm not calling it a riot.
Well, it's so interesting. It's like, who gets to tell history, right? And gets to report on it. Because, I mean, there's nothing about a riot about this. These people were literally, it was a massacre. They went in. I think it's even like, I don't know, like, what do you call it when there's people that go into your town and
a mob, it's destruction. They can't handle the fact that black people were wealthy.
That's what it literally comes down to, and it's so interesting because it's like, I think this is the prime example, because I was literally thinking about, you know, like, this sounds like a black utopia, and I think a lot of communities do really well by keeping their money within their communities, and they shop at their local businesses. I feel like this is the reason why black communities aren't able to thrive. It was shut down
immediately.
And we that lesson, it's there. It was like a message was sent in the black community as like, our communities aren't thriving as much as others. We lose our neighborhoods. We don't own our neighborhoods as much. We don't own our own wealth. We don't keep the money within our own community. And
one accusation by a 17-year-old girl leads to 300 people losing their lives and everyone becoming homeless in all the buildings. Anyway, so remember A.B. Jackson?
Yeah.
Dr. Jackson, the most capable black surgeon?
Yeah.
He was shot to death. He left his house during the unrest and somebody shot him. So this massacre was omitted from state and local records and is rarely mentioned in history books, classrooms, or even in private.
I've never heard about this ever.
This is destruction
at
the highest level. If this were to happen right now, can you imagine?
Yeah.
This is disgusting. When I heard this story, I could not believe it.
I mean, it goes back to like what you're saying is like, I mean, they could not stand that this, these black communities, again, like this, a group of people that were brought here from, not stolen from their homes for generations and look how fucking successful the system was,
able
not
to do something
to just make a new for their lives and weren't bothering anybody, had their own communities, their own place. And they couldn't handle someone being successful. It's the same thing. Like how, like people today still could not stand that there was a black man in the White House.
Right.
Can't stand seeing a beautiful black family be beautiful, amazing, brilliant.
Right. We firebombed the White House. That's what happened. Yeah. America couldn't handle it, so they firebombed the White House, just like how they firebombed it.
Burned it down. They're like, burn this shit down.
Get Trump in there. Burn it down.
Yeah.
So here's the aftermath. I can't just leave off on that note.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yay.
So the community mobilized its resources and rebuilt Greenwood in 5 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The resilience.
I know. Can you imagine that? So once they rebuilt it, throughout the 20s, it was a hotbed of jazz and blues.
Beautiful.
They persevered. Unfortunately, the neighborhood fell to economic and population drain of the 1960s.
Okay.
But and much of the area was leveled during urban renewal in the 1970s to make way for a highway loop around the downtown district
that
revitalization.
Is not an accident. They're like, where are we going to put this highway? Oh, where this black community is. Sorry, you got to go. Highway.
Been waiting for it. Yep. As they've been probably sucking resources from them to get them into the economic and population drain.
Yep.
So revitalization and preservation efforts in the 1990s and 2000s resulted in tourism initiatives and memorials. And today.
Yes.
So John Hope Franklin Greenwood Reconciliation Park and the Greenwood Cultural Center honor the victims of the Tulsa Race Riot, or the Greenwood Massacre, as I'm redubbing it.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Greenwood Chamber of Commerce plans a larger museum to be built with the participation of the National Park Service.
Wow.
So if you live in Oklahoma, I say go visit Greenwood. Support that district. Go to the museums. Go support, because these stories need to be told. These are the things that we need to remind America, that if something in 1921 happened where you can firebomb a whole community and leave 10,000 people without homes and 300 people without their lives and then take it off the books and nobody gives a fuck about it, then we are not living in a proper society. Because that was not that long ago in the grand scheme of things.
No, that was supposed to be like the Roaring 20s. It was supposed to be, and the fact that that happened there, Yeah,
This is why whenever somebody's like, ooh, the 20s are fun, I'm like, go fuck yourself. No.
You're like, and here's a little pamphlet.
Right.
About this massacre that happened that no one talks about.
Exactly. So I am bringing that. I want everybody to be aware of the history of America, aware of what happened, aware of when black people tried to do something for themselves, what happened, and how it's all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
The word of a 17-year-old white girl. 17 is a girl. And I'm not discrediting her. It could even have happened. This guy could have assaulted her. It probably didn't. But even if he did, this didn't need to be the result of it.
It doesn't give permission to essentially massacre, like the slaughtering of an entire community.
They were slaughtered.
It was unwarranted in that sense.
Exactly. 300 people lost their lives.
And you know, it's interesting because that time period is Birth of a Nation had just come out, I think 1918, right? I believe.
Yep.
And it literally depicts this story and this fear and this phobia. And again, what happens when fear and phobia take over? Just to go back to my plane ride experience.
Yes.
I did not allow the fear and phobia to, like, I could have like rallied an entire plane ride against him, you know?
Right. And I'm sure it would have happened with the right fear-minded person in there.
Can't let the fear take over. Fear can sit there, but it doesn't to let it, you know, take over in that sense.
So
this
true.
Should be explored more in Black History Month as well.
Right.
Because I think, like, thank you for providing me more of the history of my people and my community.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, even Black History Month, like, it can't just be, like, you know, Martin Luther King and
Rosa Parks.
And Rosa Parks.
They're great, but let's explore more avenues.
Talk more about the ugly things that have happened. And the perseverance is the thing that I take away most of this story, is how Black people continue to persevere. And I say this, we are a beautiful, magical people.
We are. In order to 5 years bounce back from that bullshit.
Amazing.
Also, I just want to really emphasize that, yes, this is a black community and this happened to black people, but it's American history. And if you're white, if you're Asian, if you're Latinx, if you are American, this is your history.
Yeah.
This happened on American soil by American people to American people.
This is your story,
too. This is your story. If you consider yourself American, this is your story.
And wear that travesty, you know, wear it with you to continue pushing forward and moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing forward and moving forward. You're just going forward. Yeah. Go forward with your bad self.
Should we go forward to your corner?
Go forward over to my corner. It sounds like a forward email, but forward it over to me. I am loving this. How the sausage is made. A little peek behind the jockstrap for all of you all.
Okay.
Usually when Aneke and I are recording together, I'm driving. Aneke has been counting me in.
I have been.
She's like, are you ready? Now we're going to start recording. So count me in. Usually that's me.
You know what? I love the authority and the control. I am into it. I'm very power hungry right now. It's feeling good.
You know, I am a man who I love badass bitches in charge. I love ladies in charge. I love not Charles in charge, but I love Charlene in charge.
All right, yeah, you gender swap that.
I love Charlene in charge.
Swap it.
Fuck you, Charles. So anyways, I wanted to just get at that.
You know.
Just, you know. And so what we're going to do now is do a history of the AIDS quilt.
Yes, you better school me on that.
I got to school you, because I think a lot of folks are just like, I think a quilt was made, or they don't really understand what it is.
I just remember a giant-ass quilt.
Yeah, so let's, and why? What's the point of it, right?
I was a little
kid. So you were a kid. I think a lot of us were, and let's just go into there. Because also there's like, I remember this when I was watching Team America, you know, the South Park guys.
Team America, fuck yeah.
And they have this thing, like one of the guys is one of the puppets is an actor.
Matt Damon.
No, not
okay.
That one.
He's an actor.
In what's like, they do a spoof on Rent. And it's,
yes, where they're just like.
And they're like, everybody's got AIDS.
Right.
AIDS. And at the time I was like, huh, that's funny. But of course, now that I know more and I'm, you know, a more enlightened adult, I'm like, that's it. And they're like, there's a line in it. They're like, come on, everybody, we got quilting to do.
Oh, like for the AIDS quilt.
And now that I know the history of the AIDS quilt, I'm like, that shit's not funny. And that's again why I get upset with the South Park guys going on a little tangent.
Yes.
Because they feel like they're this authority to be able to make all these jokes about things that are not their issues to make jokes about.
Right. I mean, I know that yours. Like you're trying to be edgy, but there's
it's not yours. That's not yours. It's not yours to joke about because right. a lot of people
died.
So let's get to there. So let's remember the 1980s as much
kind
as you
of,
can.
I was a baby.
So if you do the history of like you can do the timeline of where they think AIDS like where it started like and right. like it's crazy. That's a different story.
I heard that it's been here for longer than they were saying.
Absolutely,
before.
They're doing some digging, and it was. But it really was became the epidemic that it was in the early 1980s. And so, as I'm telling you the history of this, please remember. So, it took till 1988 for President Ronald Reagan to even mention the word AIDS and acknowledge that an epidemic of mass proportions was happening, and it was affecting mainly because if he were to say that, he'd have to mention the word gay. Because it was the communities that were being targeted the most, and black and brown folks. It was a pandemic that was like, I mean, it was like a Katrina, essentially.
It was taking over.
Yeah. And I mean Katrina in the sense of that it was like
wiping out a group of people.
A genocide in this country. Yeah. And that's what the 80s was. And that's like, fuck anybody who's like, yay, Ronald Reagan. Go fuck yourself. I am so... Yeah. Anyways, I'm gonna get back to the story. Don't
digress.
Get me talking about
you
Ronald
digress.
Reagan, because I am not a fan. I'm not a fan. So, in the beginning, the quilt was conceived in about November of 1985 by longtime San Francisco gay rights activist Cleve Jones.
Local hero.
Exactly. I feel so great now that we're doing this episode in San Francisco.
Yeah,
we're
just
literally
connected to the land and the people of the movement.
Where history happened. Mm-hmm. And since the 1970 assassinations of gay San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone, Jones had been helping to organize the annual Candlelight March honoring those men.
Oh, okay.
So they were having these. And then while planning the 1985 march, he learned that at this time, over 1,000 San Franciscans had been lost to AIDS.
Oh, shit.
So then he asked each of his fellow marchers to write on placards the names of friends and loved ones who had died of AIDS.
Wow.
So then at the end of the march, James and others, they stood on these ladders and they were taping these placards to the walls of the San Francisco Federal Building.
Oh, wow.
And so the walls of the names all placed up there, it looked like
a quilt.
Yes. So there was where the idea was spawned.
Got
from
it.
That.
Oh, that's a cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so from there, Jones and the rest of his homies, they made plans for a larger memorial. So they're like, hey, this is, you know, the idea was to never forget these names. Like,
right.
It's literally, I can't imagine what it was like being in that time period. Because it's literally like the new sort of plague. Like we have
people were dying.
And they didn't really know why and the information behind it. And like, you know, even women who had AIDS were also giving birth to babies with AIDS. Like, no, it was like, there was such misinformation.
Right.
Like, so terrifying. Your friends were dying. And about a year later after this, he created the first panel for the AIDS Memorial Quilt in memory of his friend, Marvin Feldman. So Marvin Feldman was the first quilt piece that was made.
Wow.
And then in June 1987, Jones teamed up with Mike Smith and several other family members, and they created the Names Project Foundation.
Oh, I love it. So remember the name.
Yes, exactly. So the Names Project Foundation is who is spearheading this whole entire AIDS quilt. And the goal was to create a memorial for those who had died of AIDS.
Yeah.
And to help people understand the devastating impact of the disease.
This sounds great and beautiful.
Right. Like, just like, what can we do? And also, it's so crazy, using art to get out messaging and also putting that energy, because people who had lost someone would put the energy into making this quilt, this you know, part of this beautiful memorial.
Yeah.
And people were feeling this quilt from the beginning. They're like, damn, this is a great idea.
People were like, we are into this
I am into some quilt and let's do it.
We all love a craft in our heart.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know what? Those pussy hats, right?
We all love a craft in our heart.
There's something that just really brings it. It's like, oh, now
every movement needs a craft.
That's pretty much it. Every movement needs a craft. A crafting book by Aneke Fitz-Clark.
And it's me just holding like a fist up.
Yeah, with some knitting needles in it.
With a crochet needle.
With a crochet needle.
Because I crochet.
Damn right you do. And it's me with some crayons.
Yeah.
Hey, crayons and art too. Right on the walls. So like I said, this was a public response. The people were feeling this from the beginning.
Yeah.
And in the U.S., the most cities affected by AIDS at that time, Atlanta, New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco.
Big cities.
Yeah, so they all sent their panels to San Francisco to the workshop. So there was a workshop here.
Ooh.
And they started getting generous donors, were providing machines and equipment and other materials.
There
were
this.
Volunteers. Like, people were putting their energy and their feelings
this
towards
something.
This is beautiful. So then there, after that, there became these big displays that they would start doing. So the first one was on October 11th, 1987. Mm. The quilt was displayed for the first time on the National Mall in Washington, D.C.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember being a little kid, hearing about the quilt and seeing it and the impact of it. This is the impact of art. It was gigantic.
It's huge.
I remember seeing how big it was, and that really spoke to me the impact that AIDS and HIV had on America.
Yeah. Whew, yeah. And so around that time, so it was during, in the time that they did it, it was during the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. So they had this big march. And essentially people were like, hey, pay attention. There's this thing that's happening. And your leaders of your world and your community are supposed to be there for you. The whole entire point of having these communities and why, you know, we used to be tribes and we started protecting each other.
Mm-hmm.
These were American citizens.
Right.
Dying. And no one in the government
Nobody's
was giving
saying
a
anything.
Fuck. And so like you said, when you saw it, it covered a space larger than a football field. Like
wow.
you said, it was huge.
Yeah.
So this first one that they did in 1987 had 1,920 panels.
Wow.
500,000 people visited the quilt that weekend. And the response was overwhelming for that. And they did, after that, it led to a 4-month tour.
Oh, wow.
So they went to 20 cities. So
they
would
take this around the country.
Take this on the road. This quilt, she's going on tour.
Everybody wants to see it.
And they go and see it. Yeah. So that started in the spring of 1988. Mm. And that tour raised nearly $500,000 for AIDS, for hundreds of AIDS services and organizations.
Wow.
So think about it. It's not only research that needs to be done, providing treatment for folks and
healthcare,
all that kind of stuff. And also just a little sidebar, like this, you know, and why I get so upset when the LGBT doesn't really exist, when I see gay men who are really ill lesbians, right?
And no!
Not all of them, but there is a subsect who where that unification is not there,
mm-hmm.
and they give a gross to the lesbians. Again, that's toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And two, the lesbians were the one, not the lesbians, but a lot of the lesbians, you get the point, that they were there taking care of their brothers, brothers who were dying, their gay brothers, because their families weren't coming
it's
there.
It's a community. Don't be tribal within. I mean, you can have love for your own personal groups and who you are, but have a heart for your whole group as a, you know, it's subdivision.
I think it's in the younger, I would say the younger gay men who missed out on this.
Who didn't go through this crisis.
Exactly. And so stop that. Like,
yeah.
The lesbians were there to take care of those gay men who were dying, and they were just as involved because,
right.
And part of this was to get attention because, and they were there at the marches and the quilts, because they recognized that this was a community-wide issue.
Yeah. Also, if you're saying you to a whole group of people, you're an asshole.
Yeah. Hold on there, buddy.
Yeah.
Some people are saying ill to you and you don't like it. So glass houses.
Exactly.
Glass houses. Like I said, the tour raised a bunch of money, about $500,000 in that first year.
That's awesome.
More than 9,000 volunteers across the country helped. It was a 7-person traveling crew move the display of the quilt across all these cities. And then as it went along, local panels were added in each city.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So in just this first year of her tour, it tripled the quilt size to more than 6,000 panels.
Jesus, this thing is humongous.
It gets bigger.
Oh my God.
It gets bigger. That's what he said. That's sad.
I know.
I mean, I'm not a size queen, but like, you should not have to champion. Don't worry, it gets bigger. Just use it. Do your thing. It's fine.
Yeah. And also,
if they side eye it, then they're not the right boo for you.
Also, I wish the quilt wasn't getting bigger because that just means more people.
True. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Thank you for bringing this back to the real world.
Sorry.
So the quilt was growing. The quilt was growing.
Yes.
And it returned to Washington, D.C. in October of 1988. So at that point, 8,288 panels were displayed.
Wow.
On the ellipse in front of the White House.
Oh,
So by 96, so did that full year, and when it came back, it went from 1,000 to 8,000.
Wow.
Panels. And so everybody...
8,000?
Yeah. So now we're at 8,288
panels. It grew eight times bigger.
Yeah.
Wow.
And everybody came to see this quilt. So
I mean, it's a spectacle at this point.
And this is the 1988. And so this is in front of the White House. Ronald fucking Reagan, right?
Yeah.
And so celebrities, politicians, families, lovers, and friends, they read aloud. And this is what I think a lot of us have seen. Yeah. This became the reading of the names. So you put the quilt out. Yes. And they would read the names of the people represented by the quilt in its panels.
Good.
And so now, and that's, it's a tradition. Yeah. Every time the quilt exists, they read the names. And then in 1989, there was a second tour of North America that Good. Brought the quilt to now 19 additional cities in the U.S. So it went from 20 cities Good. To 19 cities.
Damn.
Just getting more and more people to see it. Because again, it's also an educational moment and opportunity.
Yeah.
Bringing awareness.
Creates conversation.
Creates conversation. Also allows people to mourn and be a part of this thing together.
Yeah, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. And
this is wonderful.
And the tour there on this new tour in 1989, it raised about $250,000 for aid services and organizations.
Good.
And then it was displayed again that year at the Ellipse in Washington, D.C. And then in 1992, the AIDS Memorial Quilt included panels from every state
wow.
and 28 countries.
Dang!
So yeah, by 1992, more, because at this point, it's such a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah.
And then in October of 1992, the entire quilt returned to Washington, D.C. So she didn't come back to D.C. until... and so she went from 89 to 1992. She was just touring around.
92. Wow, yeah.
Yeah. And then in January of 1993, the Names Project was invited to march in President Clinton's inaugural parade.
Yay!
Right there along. And like, what a powerful, I mean, to go from Ronald Reagan, who
not
was
acknowledging
like,
AIDS at all.
Right. Took him until 1988 to even acknowledge it. Probably for them to lay out the fucking quilt in front of him.
You gotta say something.
Read these names.
Right.
Camera crews are there filming, and yes. people are like, what is this president?
It's a shame that it took,
absolutely.
But you know what? Good on you, Clinton.
Right?
Good on you.
Yeah. Listen, man was not perfect, but you know.
Who is?
Compared to what we have now, damn. You wish Saint. For a little blowjob. Like, you wish a blowjob was the worst thing happening.
It makes it sound so stupid that we were like crazy, considering what we're allowing right now.
A man allegedly peeing on folks. Ugh. So, the last display of the entire AIDS Memorial quilt was in October of 1996, when the quilt covered the entire National Mall in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
So, there were 1,000 newest blocks, and those blocks received since the October 1996 display were displayed the weekend of June 26, 2004.
Mm.
So after that, like not until June 26, 2004, were they all displayed again in observance of National HIV Testing Day.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know that we had a national day for that.
We do.
Mm.
We do. So get tested, y'all.
Get tested on June 26th.
So today there are Names Project chapters all across the United States. If you're thinking about getting involved, it's still going. And there are independent quilt affiliates around the world. Since 1987, over 14 million people have visited the quilt at thousands of displays worldwide. And through such displays, the Names Project Foundation, they've raised over $3 million for wow. AIDS services and organizations. And the only time that the only time the quilt was ever featured in its entirety
yeah.
was in 1987, in Washington, D.C., was at 1987, mm-hmm. 1988, 1989, 1992, and 1996.
Wow.
The quilt was also nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize back in 1989.
I think that that's an excellent nomination.
Yeah, and it won.
Well,
I
yes!
guess you just automatically get it. I think. Well, actually, I don't know if it won.
Oh.
Because it just said it was nominated.
I don't think it won then.
Because it just said it was nominated.
You could be nominated and not
Who
win.
Who the fuck beat out the AIDS quilt in 1989?
Probably Toni Morrison or
something. Okay, well, I'll give it to her.
Yeah.
And this remains the largest community art project in the entire world.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And the quilt has been a subject of countless books, films. There's a really great documentary that I highly recommend about it called The Last One.
Mm.
I took some students of mine to see it when I was running this LGBT youth theater project.
Yes.
And The Last One, there is the last quilt piece is already made.
Mm.
And they made this back like when they first started the quilt, and it's to be attached to the quilt in its whole once, like, AIDS is eradicated.
Wow.
So it's, like, the last one. And, like, the really sad part in the documentary, I get, like, really emotional.
Yeah.
That they thought, like, when they were making this back in, like, 19, when they first started making it, they were, they didn't think that they would still have to be making pieces right. all the way now until today.
Yeah. Like, we should have cured this by now.
Yeah. So it weighs about, over at this point, 54 tons. It's composed of more than 48,000 panels.
Wow.
How
many tons?
54 tons. It's heavy.
That's huge. It's,
yeah. And dedicated to more than 94,000 individuals.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of the, like, kind of touch on there. I think there's the history of it.
I think it's good to know about it because, like you were saying, I think a lot of us, especially those of us that were either not around in the 80s or were little babies in the 80s,
yeah.
we didn't get the full scope of what the quilt meant
yeah.
and what it reflects and what it truly represents. And hearing this history makes you really not want to, like, trivialize it, like how it was in
that
the South
Teen
part.
America
yeah.
Movie, yeah.
We can't just, oh, cool. No, this was a beautiful thing that incorporated the world
yeah.
that is humongous, that celebrates people, life, and community, and we need to get more of that back.
Well, and I also am just so, I mean, just remember it was, you know, started from the power that each and every one of you who's listening, that you have.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, we've talked about this before, activism and protestness, whatever. It
works.
Comes in different forms.
Yes.
It doesn't have to take you on a bullhorn.
Right.
That this started off as just like a quilt, and look how large it
right.
grew. So
yeah, like we were saying, if you can make a statement just by making a panel to celebrate a loved one to be put on this quilt, which essentially is displayed and shown and can really strike conversation and be a form of protest.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Minority Corner Kid, Dan W.
Yep, you're on it.
You were on it. Dan W. provided some information about PrEP, because we've never really talked about
right.
PrEP. And Dan W. actually created a, and for those of you who don't know, PrEP, well, Dan W. created a pamphlet.
He got you.
He got, I was like, he was like, you never talk about PrEP. I'm like, do some research for us and we'll talk about it. And Dan W. was like, I'm creating you a pamphlet. Just like Lincoln, we love a pamphlet.
We do.
So there's a pamphlet. I'm going to post this actually in the Minority
Corner
Kids.
Oh, you are. Good.
An incentive for you to join the Corner Kids Club, because I'm going to post his pamphlet about PrEP. And I think just to tie in a little bit of information about PrEP. I haven't talked about it because I just haven't talked about it.
It hasn't come up.
It just hasn't really come up. Mm-hmm. And so for those of you who are, you know, sexually active, especially I'm talking to my gays, the most at risk folks, especially my gay folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you are having, you know, sex out there, the PrEP is a great, it's a great opportunity to, you take these, it's like the pill.
Yeah.
You take a pill
mm-hmm.
and it'll keep you safe.
No AIDS.
It'll, yep, no HIV.
HIV.
Yeah. HIV happens first and then it's the AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
AIDS? Who am I?
I don't.
A grandmother?
You
know, the AIDS and the lesbians and the, so he has an entire, if you're interested in PrEP, you consult your doctor.
Yes, please consult your doctor.
Because we're in, like, what a beautiful time, like, where, how far we've come.
Right.
That people aren't dying and that we can, with things like PrEP, we can eradicate the spread of more HIV. Like, we have it at our fingertips.
Right.
So there is that. I will also say this, though, because of PrEP, there mm-hmm. is also a rise in STIs.
Oh.
So I...
Keep wrapping it up.
Right. Like, I mean... Or at least, like, get checked often. Because I've said this before, but it's like, I feel mm-hmm. like the STIs, we could get rid of them. If we had STI day,
yeah.
everybody goes to the doctor, gets checked out. Nobody have sex with each other until we figure this out. In 7 days, and then we just get rid of it. Like, you could get rid of it.
Okay, here, I'm talking to everybody with genitalia who likes to put it next to other genitalia. One, use protection. Two, go to the doctor regularly while you still can. Our healthcare is in jeopardy right now. Get yourself checked out. Use protection. Use whatever method that you need to do, because it's like a car. This is like, I to me, it's like when you're driving on the freeway and somebody's driving fast and crazy, I don't understand it because they're putting themselves in danger too. Because when you get into a car accident, not only do you fuck up somebody else, you fuck yourself up.
True.
So if you're having unprotected sex and being wild out there, you might fuck up somebody else, but you're fucking yourself up too.
Yeah, that's so true.
If there's anything that I know that we all can be, is narcissistic and self-interested.
Hell yeah, I love
it. Do it for yourself.
Do it for you. Do it for you. Look in the mirror and be like, I'm going to do it for you.
Right. Protect yourself.
So see if prep is right for you.
Yeah.
I feel like we went old school 90s after school special.
I got serious.
We did. It was like, listen up, kids.
I know. Protect yourself.
And I get why some of you are like, I don't want to wear a condom because it feels condom. Really good. But the point of prep is that you're not so, like, you're able to do it without a condom. But get ready for the gonorrheas.
I know.
Get ready for the chlamydias.
Right.
Which, it's such a beautiful name.
What, chlamydia?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No?
No.
I feel like if it wasn't associated with an STI, I might name my daughter that.
Sounds like clit.
Hey, clit clit.
Nope.
Okay, nope. Anyway. That is the history of AIDS quilt. I'm going to post a link. There's more information about it, but I'm going to post the link. Please watch the documentary, The Last Ones. There's also an award. One of the documentaries won an award. Common Threads, Stories from the Quilt won the Academy Award as Best Feature Length Documentary Film in 1989.
Oh.
So there's more information out there.
Yeah.
I think it's something that we just don't really talk about enough.
Right.
It's still here and we need to keep talking about it until it goes away.
We need to roll it back out again.
Roll out that quilt.
Well, I'm ready for it.
Bring
because
it out.
We need to remind some people in power why we need health care.
That is a beautiful idea. Actually, that is a great idea. I think we should be re-rolling out the quilt and right in front of his little office. House.
Mar-a-Lago. We need to roll it over there because that's where he is anyways all
and
the time.
If you're wondering, oh, won't it get dirty? I will say this, that there is an entire organization, like some of the money that they raise for it goes to keeping the quilt clean.
Oh, I like that.
From debris and dust so we can keep it going.
Nice. So it stays pristine.
It's nice and
for
so
generations to come.
So fresh and so clean.
Aw, thanks, James.
Thank you. Minority Corner. Movie Report. This just in. So, Aneke and I, we're doing another Minority Corner movie review.
Yeah.
So, we're together hanging out, and we were like, you know what we should watch?
Catwoman. Not a new one.
Nope. The Halle Berry one.
Came out a year before Batman Begins.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Before all the prestige superhero movies.
That is a really interesting point. Like, what was the game plan? Was Halle Berry's Catwoman going to fit into that world?
I have no idea what they were trying to do with this movie.
I don't know either. And, you know, I think you and I had this conversation. The Catwoman movie starring Halle Berry would have done really well 10 years ahead. Like, if it was in 1996, would have done well.
It was a 90s waiting to excel, trying to be movie. But it was released into the 2000s.
It was too late. 10 years too late. It's like someone was like, Halle Berry is a black woman being a superhero. And they just like melded in, like you said, Waiting to Excel or any like black lady romantic comedy.
Yes.
And put like a leather suit on her and called her a superhero.
It was weird because it almost felt like, you know what, I've been thinking about this.
Yeah.
And it dawned on me.
Yes.
It was like a knockoff. It was a knockoff DC comic because it wasn't the actual cat lady.
No. Nope.
It was cat, like a cat women through time.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the whole beginning was like all these clip images of like women in ancient Egypt and in Greece wearing cat masks.
Yeah.
And then focusing on the cats that were hanging out around them.
Yep.
Like, what?
You know, it's so funny. Yeah, they gave the black version, this knockoff version. She's not really a part of the real DC. Not that DC has their shit together at all anyways.
They don't.
And they didn't then either.
They did not.
Let's talk about Halle Berry for a second.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about her.
I love me some Halle Berry. I love her.
She's good.
But she gives 110% in every scene, every moment.
She acted her non-acting ass off throughout the whole damn movie.
And I have this theory that Halle Berry's never really played a character in her movie. She's playing what would Halle Berry do if she was in this situation?
Extremely Halle Berry.
She's just always, she wasn't playing Patience Phillips. She was playing, which I think they were trying to do like an alliteration for
but
like
it was
comic
terrible.
Books. It should have been like, you know, Philippa Phillips or Patience Patton.
Philomena Phillips
or something. Anyways, you fucked up on that one.
Yeah,
like,
strike one.
Whoever was writing this doesn't know nothing. Don't know nothing. But like Halle Berry, like it's like she's like, even in X-Men, she wasn't playing Storm. She was playing, what would Holly Berry do if she had the power to manipulate weather?
She was wearing a wig and looking great. And
she was like, do you know what happened to a toad that gets struck by lightning? Same thing happens on everything else.
Worst line ever.
So bad.
Okay, so she starts off the movie not as Catwoman. She starts off as this frump-a-dump.
She's supposed to be a frumpy woman, right?
Frumpy, dumpy.
Did you buy Holly Berry as this frumpy-dump woman?
No, she's just wearing lots of layers.
Because you know what it was? It was, what would Holly Berry do if she wasn't as glamorous?
This is just her on her day off. Still her. Pretty.
Yeah, still pretty.
Bad wig.
I was like, Aneke, is that her hair?
And I was like, shut up. It's not.
I wasn't sure.
This is the biggest wig I've ever seen. It was the biggest wig. Okay. One thing that really irritated me about the beginning of the movie. The continuity was terrible because they had 2 days. Went full day at work, nighttime, another full day at work. Why is everybody wearing the same clothing?
Aneke, the super sleuth that she is, she pointed it out to me. She was
it
like,
was not hard.
There were so many other distracting things about the movie.
They were not wearing blasé things either. One lady's wearing like a red velour top 2 days in a row.
Alex Borstein, yeah. who from Mad TV and does the voice of Lois on Family Guy. Yeah. And it's just so funny. Like, where is the person to say, like, literally everybody in the office is wearing the same outfit 2 days in a row.
And then they show them another day wearing different clothes.
So I know what you're thinking. You're like, well, maybe they're just doing like a homage to comic books because right. they wear like the same, cartoon character right. outfit, right? Like the Simpsons, they wear the same outfit.
No.
Nope. It was a whole entire other different thing. And then you've got Benjamin Bratt.
Sexy man.
And he's the detective who's always first on the scene all the time.
Every single crime committed in this town, this detective is there.
And you know what I also love is like, yeah, so he's the first one there. I do appreciate that it was a love story of two people of color loving two
yes,
people of color.
Yes, I do like that
just
as well.
Just in a very shitty movie.
A terrible movie.
Can we talk about her fighting style was capoeira?
She was always just like, skit, scat.
A kick. She kick. Was kicking here, kicking there. Here. Oh, the musical score of this movie.
Okay.
Who scored this movie?
I don't even know. It was just soft R&B wailing.
Ooh, even like in the middle of a fight scene. Ha, aha, I kick it up. Hi, ha, hoo. I'm kicking. Nope, I'm going to get you. Give me them diamonds. I'm a Catwoman. I'm the cattiest Catwoman ever. You like bad girls. Those are direct lines from it. Yeah. Like,
yeah, those were direct lines.
It was like someone was like, we need a score for this. Should we get a composer? No. Let me get my R&B playlist.
Yeah.
And we'll just score that. She's a black woman. In the middle of a fight scene. She's a cat woman. Oh, and then it'd be like lyrics. It's like, she's kicking it up. She's dangerous. She's sassafras. She's getting it going.
This is the truth. We're not even. We're not.
Oh, best scene. Okay. She's already become a cat woman.
She dies in water and a cat breathes life into her. Spoiler alert. I don't care about you.
Sure
if you're
she,
mad.
She died. She was like snooping around, and they're like, "Who's there?" They started shooting at her because that's what you do,
right?
And then she got cat powers
because one, we were really pissed off about this too because
CGI
cat for no reason. All they needed a cat was to walk up on her and breathe some breath into her mouth. A cat could have done that.
There was a million CGI things. I'm like, why was that CGI?
Right. They had real cats there.
So then she's playing basketball. And really, if you were like, if you were friends with Holly Berry as Catwoman while this movie was happening, you'd be like, this woman's just crazy. I don't know if she's a Catwoman, but she's just crazy.
Yes.
She's playing basketball. Because again, she's black. So they're like, you know what she's going to do?
We need something urban.
She's playing basketball.
With a bunch of little kids watching her.
They were like, why don't y'all play basketball on a date? And it's just like, it's really bad rough cuts.
Looks like they're just standing, spooning each other.
Because you shoot like from the waist up, it's like them, and then it's like a stunt double.
And they're just like tossing a basketball around.
And then the worst part about it is she then fights, they couldn't fight a real villain for her. This is the thing that really ticks me off. She literally fights Sharon Stone face.
Yeah, so the villain is a beauty cream. That makes your face, when you stop using it, it makes your face melt. And when you keep using it, it turns your face to marble.
Yeah, so that's her big villain. She's fighting a makeup line, which I think, and Holly Berry was wearing so much makeup throughout the movie, I think it was a commercial for Revlon the entire time.
So much. Lip gloss was popping through the whole thing.
Her lip gloss is cool. Lip gloss is popping.
Also, can we talk about how she gave herself a haircut with 2 scissors, one in each hand?
She did. She cut, oh yeah, because cats can do that. Cats are nimble. She's like a snip, a snip, a snip, a snip, a snip, a snip, a snip. She just happened to have this like black, sexy leather. Like they do, they drop it. And her friend Alex Borstein's like, maybe you should wear that, you know, black leather outfit I gave you for your birthday. So then you know she's got one.
What friend gives you a black leather? That's expensive. I bought a leather jacket. And that cost a lot of money.
Your friends need to step it up in case you become the Catwoman. And then, so that outfit, the first outfit she has, it's cool. It works.
It's cute.
And then she takes it up a notch.
She just slashes it to pieces.
She slashes it to pieces. She's wearing some sort of bra, which, how are her boobies staying up in there while
they
she's fighting?
They are not.
She's got, like, her leather pants are slashed with claw marks.
She's wearing open-toed stilettos.
And being, a fighting crime, being a jewel thief.
She attached some belts to like crisscross on her gut.
You just didn't even know. It makes me just so sad because it was such a missed opportunity that whoever wrote this saw a cash grab.
I know.
They were like, Holly Berry's really famous right now. Let's get her in a superhero thing.
And then let's fuck it up.
Yeah. It wasn't like this was like a passion project or anything. Dumb. Couldn't give her a villain.
Why does she have, she steals from a
jewelry place.
But she beats up the burglars who are already.
And there's like five or six burglars robbing a jewelry store because that's what you do.
That's what you do.
And they're like, a bang, bang, I'm gonna shoot you.
Nobody's paying attention. No cops are on the beat, apparently, that
Where
night.
Was Benjamin Bratt that day? You're
taking
usually
a nap.
First one on the scene,
Not
but
there.
Burglary happens.
She steals a bunch of jewels.
She does.
And then she wakes up, she feels bad, puts them in a brown paper bag, and writes sorry on it, and then leaves it there.
And the sorry, spoiler, the sorry happens to be the same because she stood up Benjamin Bratt for coffee because she became the Catwoman and died. So she missed the coffee
she
date.
She missed the coffee date.
Because she was just like napping as a cat.
It's
as a
what
cat
you do.
Also, I love that every time Holly Berry's in a scene,
she's like a cat.
She's like a cat. She like literally, Holly Berry did her research and she's like, I'm a cat.
She's like, tweak, 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 cat, meow.
She's like walking on the furniture like a cat. You know? So she looks just like a crazy lady.
She looks like a crazy person.
But when she missed her date with Benjamin Bratt, she wrote sorry on the coffee cup.
The same way.
The same way when she returned the jewels on the brown paper bag, it said sorry. So then he conveniently still has the coffee cup on his desk and matches like,
ooh. It takes him 12 years. He's like looking at the cup and then he's looking at the bag. Then he's looking at the cup and then he's looking at the bag. And then he goes to a handwriting specialist when you can look at it and it looks the same.
And the best part is the handwriting specialist, because they keep trying to have this plot that like, and you never buy it because it's Holly Berry, and Holly Berry can play certain roles and not this.
She looks like Holly Berry in a mask.
And that's why every time she's just Holly Berry. And so the guy was like, oh, this first writing, which is the Patient Phillips one. He's like, this is a woman who, she's very humble. She's not sure about herself. And then he looks at the cat. Woman writing, and he's like, but this is a woman who's bad and dangerous and knows what she wants. They like literally redefine her lazy writing.
Like, put it together. This is a party.
Yeah.
Like, what? Thanks, what? Handwriting man?
And the entire time, like, she's like, at the very end, she's like, she gets framed for murder. The plot just goes crazy. Sharon Stone tries to, like, you know, frame her for murder for her husband.
Doesn't Sharon Stone hit Holly Berry with a lead pipe in her naked, exposed gut several times?
Oh, yeah.
And then Holly Berry just gets up.
She does. Like, at first,
she's like, meow.
Like, for, again, she's fighting Sharon Stoneface. Is Sharon Stoneface trained in capoeira? But somehow, like, she getting, and when Holly Berry takes a hit, her fighting, like, again, 110%. And like my favorite, I just want to get this last thing out of when like it's this big. She's supposed to be Catwoman, right?
Yes.
She's supposed to be Catwoman because again, like Holly Berry is only playing like, well, what if I was in this scene? How would I react? Not how Catwoman would react.
Because when she, how I, how Holly Berry.
Yes. So when she finds out that Sharon Stone set her up for murder and that she was like, so she doesn't react like, ooh, I can't believe you did it. I'm Catwoman. I'm gonna fight you. She's like, no, you set me up for murder. It was you all along. No, because if you were in that situation, that's how you naturally would maybe react.
If you're Catwoman, you're supposed to be like, oh no, how dare you, criminal?
Perfect.
I know.
That was shoehorned in there. So, Catwoman, there you have it.
You don't gotta see it. It's a terrible movie.
We just told you all the things that you need to.
But if you do want to see something really terrible, like to the level of ridiculous terrible.
It's on Netflix.
It is.
You've got nothing to lose except an hour and a half of your time, but you'll have a good time. You'll have a good time. Ooh, I'm a Catwoman. Dangerous.
We did it!
This is another jam-packed episode.
We are able to cram so much when we're in the same room together.
I mean, you guys are smoking a cigarette right now. I'm not condoning cigarette smoking.
Hypothetical cigarette.
A hypothetical. Get a candy cigarette.
Yeah, just do the little puffs, the sugar puffs.
Little sugar puffs, right? But it only will lead to, like, nicotine. So
it's true.
The point is, you must feel exhausted. That's what I was trying to get to.
Because we worked y'all.
We worked you out today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can we give a shout out to Miss Ebony?
Yes. Ebony S. just posted on the Corner Kids page that Marsha
Marsha
P. Johnson
yes
There's going to be a movie made about her.
That's awesome.
And she was the woman who started the Stonewall riots,
that's
right?
Exactly.
She's
it.
The one that threw the
first heel, rumored to have thrown the first
heel. The
heel
or a shot glass.
I think they said heel, but maybe it was a short
shot. She threw something.
She threw something. And go back, it was not Danny What's-His-Name.
No, it was a black woman.
Can I say, keep doing the work, y'all, because Aneke has said this before, speak with your dollars. And what yes. we've been doing is, like, when they're like, it's a bunch of white people in Egypt, we're like, nope.
Nope.
It's a white person leading the Stonewall Riot Rebellion.
That did not happen.
Nope, and we're not doing it. And also what I like, too, is I think we're law of attractioning shit. Because yes. we're like, let's see this movie. And they're like,
it's coming. We're doing this.
Yeah. So just.
We had Hidden Figures.
We had Hidden Figures. You manifested that. You're like, this should be a movie. Academy Award winning.
You also said the Marsha P. Johnson thing.
I was like, it should be a movie. And there it is.
Here it comes.
So now we just need to be on one of these as a vehicle.
Yes.
For ourselves.
Hello, put us in it.
Hey, I'm ready.
You're
I'm ready
welcome.
For this jelly. This has been a great episode.
It's been
I always
great.
Love doing episodes when I can see you. And
I know.
Touch
I feel like
you.
We're able to like vibe a lot better this way.
Yeah. What do y'all think? Tweet at us. Think about it.
Well, it's not going to. I mean, James lives in New York. So.
All right, this is it.
I know.
This is what's happening.
Don't forget to tweet us at Minority Corner with a K.
Yes, absolutely.
What else is going on?
Join the Minority Corner Kids playground group. A lot of magic stuff happening.
It's on Facebook.
I'm going to put that prep pamphlet in
yes.
there. It's in prep. You're like, should I take prep? Again, whatever wonderful.
It's prep for you.
It's prep for you. Yeah, this pamphlet will tell you all about it. So check that out. That's it. That's all I got. I got nothing
all,
else.
Yeah, I got nothing else either.
Live your best life, y'all. Live your best life.
We love you.
Bye, y'all. Hi, everybody. I'm Justin McElroy.
And I'm Dr. Sydney McElroy.
Every week, we release a medical history podcast called Sawbones.
We go over the history of the dumbest, grossest, weirdest stuff humans have been doing to each other since the dawn of mankind.
But it's a funny show.
But it's also so disgusting and stomach-turning, you won't believe it.
But it's also like... funny. It's funny.
It is the wildest, grossest, nastiest stuff you can imagine.
It's a real hoot. It's called Sawbones, and we release it every week on iTunes, wherever podcasts are sold, and right here on MaximumFun.org.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert, and we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean... yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? All right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.